This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 310 for Friday, March 22nd, 2019. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me this evening, Mr. Alistair McFly of omizah.com, and twitch.tv/AlistairMcFly, I forgot to check all of this with you before the show, so I'm asking you now, are those still places that people can go to find you?
They absolutely are, yes. I haven't really been updated that much. Twitch, now that I've just got a new computer as of today, I'm hoping to have that set up, and then hopefully, now that I've got something a bit more powerful, should be able to get back to the streaming side of things.
Awesome, awesome. I know you can't talk about it on the show, but I am excited to talk to you about it after the show, because it's a big upgrade for you, which is really nice. It's something that I can talk about myself a little bit is that I cannot buy it right now. I have other things I have to take care of financially. There are other things in the studio that need my attention, like say better earphones, a proper chair to sit on, considering how much time I'm spending now streaming and podcasting and in the studio managing the fantastic communities that are growing around the stuff that I'm doing. And it all seems to be happening quite quickly. So a new computer is not in the works. However, I want to start to price one out so that in the next year or so, which I know is a long time to plan for PC because tech changes so fast, but I want to, I don't know whether I want to build one myself or whether I just want to find a company and say like, look, this is what I want to do. I would like it to be able to stream. I would like to be able to play some games that are accessible or on different platforms. And for me, something that dawned on me the other day when I was thinking about a potential new PC and my venture back to a PC, and that is VR. And VR specifically for art and streaming VR type stuff. Not so much for gaming.
Is that kind of like the 3D painting?
Yeah. I've shared this on Instagram. I've shared this, I think, on Twitter. I don't see his stuff on Twitter very much just because, unfortunately, my Twitter feed is a mess. But Goro Fujita, spelt the way that it sounds, is an artist that is leading the charge in a lot of content online as far as VR. He calls them Quillustrations. They're in a program called Quill, which I believe is on the HTC Vive. That's the Google one, right? Facebook bot?
I believe so,
I can't remember.
Facebook got Oculus.
Oculus. Okay, so it's not the Rift. I'm pretty sure it's the HTC Vive. It's been a long time since I've looked into VR, and some things have changed hands in the last little while. But he is drawing in this program, which also allows you to animate. And so he creates these little loop cycles of like, you know, a little dog barking and some birds chirping and stuff like that. And then he goes in and animates a camera move around the whole thing. So then in addition to animating the characters, he's animating the camera as well. So it's kind of like having a little animated snow globe that he then puts a camera pan in. But then he's taken it's really cool. Then he's taken to not just posting the in-app render from Quill, but actually sending it through a rendering program, which gives it like ray tracing and reflections. And so like all of a sudden it starts to look really, really neat. It's still low res. Like you're still painting with ribbons. You can see the polygons and you can see the edges of things. So there's
And VR resolution's not that great yet.
Yeah,
anyway.
Exactly. Right. So, but it ends up looking like early stop motion animation, which does have a charm to it. I'd really like to try and do some stuff like that, specifically because of my work and my play lately in Minecraft over the last few years. Two barely, has really kind of prompted me to move more into a 3D space artistically. I'm behind the times. I do a lot of 2D stuff, and yes, it's still in demand in some ways, but more and more and more I'm getting clients that want graphic design, motion graphics, computer stuff, and less, even digital flat cartoons are more of a novelty now, which, I mean, it could be a good niche, but as far as professional skills that I could offer, I'd like to do some work in video games, and when you can't model your way out of a rabbit hole, that poses a problem. Go ahead.
Even when you look at Comedy Central and the South Park guys, they have probably one of the most 2D cartoons out there, and the entire thing is done in 3D.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's all done in a 3D space, but they still make everything look flat and 2D, even though it's really not.
Yeah. So there's some opportunities to create some really neat media, I think, with VR. So that therein lies my interest. And that's also, I've been also doing a lot of modeling in the last little bit. I picked up Blockbench, which is a free block modeling program meant to interact with Minecraft. So I've created some custom...
That's the one where you showed me some custom chairs that you were looking at for Minecraft. Is that
yes, it is.
That you showed me the other day?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I recently found someone on a Discord that I'm part of mentioned that there's a plugin that I can download for it that will allow it to open up Vox files. So things like my Magic of Voxel program, which I really like, I could then model something in that and then bring it into Blockbench and then export it into Minecraft. The Blockbench exports the JSON files directly from Minecraft. Like it's super, super easy.
So just transitioning from one to the other will be simple then.
Yeah. And I've been working a little bit just as a personal project with, developer, but that goes by Chuck online, and he's been doing this tables and chairs mod, and my idea was that I wanted to try and challenge myself and do some art within it's not a mod, it's a data pack, within the data pack to change the models in the game. So you can't make a chair in Minecraft, you have to put a stair block or a slab and some combination of blocks that don't at all look like a chair. Or if they do, it's the wrong size, and you kind of have to imagine a chair. And I find that level of, I guess, decoration in Minecraft very frustrating. It pulls me out of what I'm doing and reminds me, oh yeah, you're in a block game. And I feel like Minecraft is behind the times in that way. So I've been learning and modeling some stuff on my own, and surprisingly picking it up a lot faster than I thought. I did take some classes when I was in animation school in CG and 3D animation. This was 20 years ago, so I'm surprised that I can still kind of wrap my head around it. But I think part of it too is that I do play enough video games that my spatial awareness in a 3D program of any kind is still pretty good, right? Like if you're working yourself around a castle build in Minecraft, it's not a whole lot different than modeling something in a modeling program. You just have to kind of remember where you are and how to move, what hotkeys do what, stuff like that. So
I remember when I was a kid, again, we're probably actually going about 20 years ago, just trying to get my head around 3D modeling when that first came out, and I couldn't. I remember downloading the DeLorean from Back to the Future 2. Mm. Somebody had released it, and I downloaded it for some 3D animation thing, and I tried to get it to fly around, and it took about a week of solid rendering just to get about 2 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
On the lowest quality, because I just had, I think it was just like a Pentium 4, Pentium, or maybe Pentium 2, something like that. Something that was really just not that powerful at all.
Right.
And I just remember kind of just giving up in frustration over struggling with the 3D space versus, you know, on something that is a two-dimensional screen, just with the rendering times alone.
Yeah. Now imagine just with doing all that in real time, low res, mind you, in VR, where you're in the 3D space with the thing that you're painting.
That to me would just seem so much easier,
right? Yeah, like
just to conceptually get my head around.
Yeah, I mean, you could do
like it would make more sense.
You could do one of two things depending on how much room you have in your VR studio. If you're painting, we'll say you're painting like a little potted plant on a table, right? You're modeling and creating this potted plant. You can do the thing that we would do in a flat engagement, which on a monitor where you would spin the model so that you could model the other side of it. Like you wanted to do the west side of the pot and you're facing the east side, you would spin it around. Or in VR, you could just walk around it, right? Like if you've got enough room in your studio where you could stand up and actually move, then you could just, you know, adjust it that way. Likewise, with the VR goggles on, if you want to get up underneath something, you could just kind of tilt your head the same way that you would look under your kitchen table, right? And look under look under a model that you're working at, like you're doing the underside of a car, and you want to get all the details in. Like you could totally do that. So there's a lot of things that are really appealing to me, and I find it very, very cool. So long story short, wouldn't be the first time for this show. I would like a PC that would be able to do that, which would then justify me buying a new computer, which would then also act as a streaming computer and give me some more, I guess, leeway that way, because I've been doing both art and video game streams, and they've been received very well. I recently flipped over my personal Patreon to do video content as opposed to comics, and all of it seems to be like people are just like video. The more video you make, the better. I was like, okay, so that's going well. So I'm just future planning, future proofing, kind of looking ahead. But it's been so long since I've even looked into this world that everything is just Greek to me. It's all just numbers, and there's new video cards every month now. And it's like, oh God, like I think I might, even if I don't build it if I don't build it myself and I don't buy from a computer company, and there's lots of them out there, I might even be able to just like, you know, commission a friend, be like, hey, I'll pay you some extra cash. I'll buy the parts. But I need I need to find somebody that's steeped in all this and like use their knowledge to say like, look, I only need it to do this, 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 and this. I don't need the latest, greatest, you know, I don't need a Lamborghini. You know, I need just a good computer to do the things that I want to do. Anyway, so that's what has been on my mind along with all the modeling and stuff that I've been doing. It's been a long time since you've been on the show. So outside of a new home computer, what else has been going on in your world?
New TV as well.
Oh, nice.
Yes. Right. I really like the tax refunds in Canada. I'm not going to lie. It certainly helped. But yeah, for me, TVs have always been one of those things where my computer has always been my TV. So actual television sets are things that I've always been lacking behind on. So I had a CRT back when I was in England purely for some retro game consoles like the Sega Mega Drive, my Nintendo, and so on.
Right.
And then when I moved to Canada 5 years ago, that was when I finally got my first HD TV. And I was so excited to actually have one for the first time only 5 years ago. And I recently just moved that one to the bedroom and replaced the one in the living room with a 60-inch 4K.
Nice.
Now, it's a budget one, mind you, but for my needs and what I'm used to, it's incredible. And just being able to just watch, I've even got just a really high-resolution version of Star Trek First Contact, and just seeing that on there was just breathtaking. It hasn't looked that good since the cinema.
Well,
it feels like I'm in a cinema.
When you have something that large, it really, at that point, it all just depends on how far away you are from it, right? In the living room. If you're not super far, I mean, like, you've been to my place.
Oh, I am not. Yeah.
You know, like I don't sit very far from the TV in my living room. And if I had a 60 or 65, like I remember looking and back, you know, when my other TV died, I knew I couldn't afford one. And I also knew that it was not money that I was necessarily going to invest in another TV, mainly because I don't know how long I'm going to be in this. At the time, I don't know how long I was going to be in this apartment. And I was like, well, why buy a big TV now if I potentially have to then move it where it could get damaged? And I can deal and just wait. And so I've got a loaner on now for my parents. And I downsized. It went from 45. I think I'm down to like a 37 or something. And it's okay. It's fine. I'm used to it now. But when I was in the store, I was looking for a Sony 55 because that's what my budget was, or what I felt was be reasonable for television. And then I was standing in front of it going, oh my gosh, like I thought the 46 was big. This is freaking enormous. Of course, I realized I was standing in front of a 65 inch screen after I looked at the sign. Well, they had the 46, 55, 65 all there on the sign, but it didn't indicate which one you were actually looking at, which was stupid. Or ingenious, depending on how you look at it. So, but I've also since, after listening to some tech podcasts, realized that some of the best panels are in brands that I've never heard of. And I can't, unfortunately, I'm just remembering this anecdote now, but I don't remember the brand of the TV, but it was a 55 inch television on Amazon. And it was something ridiculous, like 650 US. So it was someone that is very steeped in tech, was suggesting that for 650, like this is the best TV for your money right now. And it was like, you know, November or some year. So like Black Friday stuff, but the 650 was the regular price. So there could have been potential Black Friday sales and all this kind of stuff. And, Patrick Norton was the podcaster that I was listening to. And man, like I couldn't believe that I paid $2,000 for a Sony TV like 10 years ago. Well, 1800, you know, after taxes and stuff, but to get a new TV that was like 4K ready and, you know, 55 inches, so bigger and cheaper by like almost a third, or two thirds, was just mind blowing. So I was like, well, I'm not going to be buying a brand name TV if I ever get a replacement. I would look into it heavily if I was doing more gaming in the living room, but much like you, I don't do much in the living room outside of like Netflix and YouTube. All of my entertainment that's not just chilling out like that is in front of the computer. Like, so it's video games, right? So I don't game in front of the TV.
Yeah. And, to be honest though, with the size of that thing, I'm feeling like I'm going to spend more living room. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
it does make a huge difference. And, even just watching stuff in 4K, cause, I've got a few movies that, I've kind of automatically upgraded to 4K now that I've got a 4K TV.
Oh, okay.
And it's just stunning seeing the difference for them. But it's going to be one of those. It's kind of like when you rent a movie at home versus go to the cinema. I'm basically going to have that same thing in my, basically like if I'm just wanting to just watch something casually, I'm just going to watch it in my bedroom. If I want to watch something spectacular and make it a bit more of an event, I'm going to go to the living room.
Yeah. I feel like, I had a hard time telling the difference with 1080p. I thought 1080p Blu-rays looked fantastic. I can't even imagine 4K, provided that 3:2 pull down is turned off. Like, I hate that smoothing thing that TVs do.
Yes.
It drives me crazy.
I deliberately got one that didn't even have it as a feature.
Nice. Yeah.
It's like, not only am I going to turn it off, I don't even want it to be even part of the TV.
Yeah.
I feel like it probably did make it cheaper not having that, because I did see, like, because I got it from Costco, and they had all the TVs all lined up, all showing the same thing. And when you turn around, the TV behind me was advertising it as a feature. You could see it actively being, you know, that it was enabled on that screen. And it just looked so much more terrible. And the TV cost almost twice the price.
It cheapens the footage. It makes it look like a handy cam. You know, like it removes, it doesn't remove the depth of field because it can't do that, but it does something to, I don't know, it does something to the...
It makes the motion look artificial, and it's often called the soap opera effect.
Yes, yeah. Because
the motion is a little bit more kind of like you would see in a soap opera versus a cinematic film.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's just something that just doesn't feel right for it. And there's something about... You know, even though you could have a better frame rate for a movie, there's something about just the traditional frame rate which just feels cinematic.
Yeah, I'd rather put
even
my
though
money,
it's not as true to life.
Yeah, I'd rather put my money in a TV that had better blacks. You know, better blacks, better refresh rate, and then not worry about the pull down stuff. But speaking of movies and TV, though, one of the things that I wanted to try and tackle this week is something that was brought up by Brockett, I believe, last year. Brockett was actually supposed to be with us this week, but he had some family stuff come up. And so we were all prepped, but we couldn't get it recorded. So Alistair was kind enough to fill in. And this is, of course, Pass or Play. I haven't had a lot of time to watch anything at length over the last little while. However, there's been a lot of new trailers dropping. There's a lot of chatter about what's coming this summer for movies. So I thought that we could take a look at a number of different trailers, and Alistair and I could just chime in as to whether we're interested in seeing the movie or whether we're just not at all interested, or what we thought of the trailer, if we've seen them, that sort of stuff. So I've got a short list of trailers, and we'll just kind of pop by one for one. And I think the easiest place to start is the elephant in the room. No, not Dumbo. Avengers, the Endgame Trailer 2, and there was some chit-chat happening on the Discord for the Citadel Cafe this week or last week around this trailer, all of which was spoiler-free because, well, there's no spoilers in the trailer. They really don't tell you a whole lot.
Which I love about Marvel. That's been one of the big staples for them, is just the lengths that they go to not put spoilers in.
Well, and now that we're into, like, all these movies are now crossovers. Like, Avengers Infinity War had everybody. Even Thor Ragnarok started to bring in a bunch of different characters and things. And it's enough of a crew that you can actually have a wicked trailer, even like once the movie's out and it's the go see it now, and there's a lot more of the movie in the trailer. There's so much packed into every Marvel movie now that even a full 3-minute trailer gives you just a smidge of the stuff you're going to see in the film. But they really handled this one well. There's a great feeling in the trailer. I got goosebumps the same way that I did with the first trailer for The Force Awakens. And
right. For
me, it's the combination of the music, the slow swell to the Avengers theme, which barely played at all, if at all, in Infinity War. Because, of course, Avengers didn't win in Infinity War. So there was no triumphant, Avengers theme happening at any point. Maybe when Thor landed, I think that might have been the only spot. But in this trailer, they start at the beginning. They show you footage of Robert Downey Jr., Iron Man, and the first one. And they go through all the different movies. They go through some of the early Captain America, his relationship with Agent Carter. Like, they go through all these major character beats and
it's kind of like a recap of the last 10 years.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And what this all means, it reminds you that these are the Avengers that are left. And they essentially show you nothing. It's a bunch of talking heads. There's no impactful scenes outside of one little teaser at the end. That really tells you anything about the movie. And it's just a good way to sell it. It's just like, this is just going to be so bloody cool, you're not going to believe it. It's so cool, we can't even show it to you. It's essentially, what I got from it, right?
Well, one of the things for me as well was the uniforms. So they have these sort of red and white uniforms that they're all kind of wearing, and it's almost kind of that signature of, they've always had their own unique powers, so they've all had their own unique style. And given the defeat that they've had in the previous film, now that uniform seems to sort of signify that they are fully united, and it seems to kind of bring that together. So that's, I thought that was an interesting sort of take.
Yeah, the whole thing is styled around that too. So a lot of the flashback cuts for different movies are black and white, but anything red is highlighted. So Captain America's shield, American flag, the red stripes, Robert Downey Jr.'s glasses, I think at some point, certainly the Falcon's glasses. So anytime they showed a character that had red in them, everything was black and white with the exception of the red feature. And the new uniforms, which to me look like spacesuits, are red and white, with some deeper colors in the cracks, but they're mostly red and white on the surface of them. And so you've seen a lot of different memes around with different characters like Deadpool in the uniform and stuff like that, which I think is kind of fun. I really enjoyed the Captain Marvel cameo at the end.
Yeah.
So good. I love that they
doesn't even flinch.
No, I love that they hinted at it, but they didn't show it in that, Thor walks up to Captain Marvel, then he reaches out and you can hear the hum of his hammer flying towards him, and he grasps it and he just kind of looks at her like, I like this chick. And she kind of grins at him like, yeah, okay. But it sort of like, at first you kind of think like, is she holding the hammer? Because that would be fantastic, right? And I'm sure there's some comic nerds out there that are actually going to be able to say like, yeah, well, actually, in issue number whatever, she actually does hold it, and potentially, I have no idea. if that's actually true. But you and I went to go see Captain Marvel together and really loved the film. So I'm excited to see her as part of the Avengers, because the wisecracking and the attitude that she is going to bring is going to really help that situation, because it's a grim situation.
I almost feel that probably one of the people, I think that her humor will probably complement Thor's quite well, but I think it'll play off quite well against Tony.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
just because
yeah.
he's going to be like the complete opposite, but he's still just as equally wisecracking.
I think that they're going to be...
And very defeated.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a battle there for Alpha Dog, right? Like, I think Tony wanting to be kind of the leader of the Avengers, you know, at least technically, but... you know, like, he's the one that can fly, right? And so I feel like Captain Marvel is also that, like, cocky fly boy, you know, fly girl, sort of mentality. And I'm wondering if there's going to be a clash there. Or it's going to be one of the two. They're going to use that clash and use it as some sort of, like, you know, character development plot point where there's friction there. Or they're going to just adore one another and be like, this is amazing, which I kind of hope they go the latter, because the former would be kind of tropey and expected. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Obviously, this is a yes for me. I'm going to be seeing this in theaters when it comes out in April.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those advanced preview screenings for me.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
Where they, which is still a weird concept for me. It's like, here's the release date, so we're just going to open it the night before. And so, but they do that for pretty much every major movie. So it's like, why is that not just the release date?
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. The midnight showing, or not even the midnight showing, because people are just like, I don't want to go to the movies at midnight. Can you just make it a 10 p.m. show?
They don't want to be open past midnight either. So
no,
they
that's
just
true, yeah.
shift it to earlier in the day. That's it, them done.
Yeah.
And they're kind of, they're finished with all those midnight shows.
I wonder if there's a technicality where the show has to be done at midnight, like at 12:01 local. That's when the movie has to be over then or later. Like, you know, if it lets out at 11 o'clock, then technically, yeah, it's the day before. I don't know. Hard to say. Either way, I know that I will be avoiding any other trailers that come out and probably avoiding any chatter about it right up until I go. Because I want to go in and see that blind. The only thing I might do is rewatch Infinity War right before I go, just to kind of get my head back into it, even though I've seen that a couple of times. Anyway, moving on, we've got Alita Battle Angel. I know that our friend Steven has seen it, and he really liked it. He thought it was great. I have watched all of the trailers now. I actually prefer the more recent trailers. Usually this kind of thing, you kind of think that you're going to be shown too much, but I think they gave you a lot more into the character development for this character. And because I care more about Alita than I do about any other characters, and they seem to give you more of a window into what she's going to be doing and how she's going to handle herself in this third trailer. And if I had the budget and the time, I would probably want to go see this in theater. It looks like a really beautiful movie. Like, it looks like it's really well done. And I'm excited. I hope it does well, because this is yet another big sci-fi nerdy movie with a female protagonist at the front, right?
Yeah, I feel like we're kind of getting into that season now of just, you know, having very strong female heroes front and center, you know, like proper role models. And it's fantastic that we're kind of getting to that point. And also ridiculous that it's taken this long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In all honesty.
No, for sure. And this isn't a new property either. This was, we talked about this on the show a little while ago, but this was an anime and a manga book as well. I'm looking forward to it. We had to choose between Alita and Captain Marvel when we went to go see Captain Marvel. So I think we chose wisely, but that's a hard choice given what I've seen in the trailer. That's a hard choice for me. I wish I should have looked up a little bit more about who's in it. I can't remember her name, the actor that plays Alita.
I'm not sure either, but it's interesting with you saying about the third one kind of making you more interested to see it, because it was kind of the first one was kind of like, oh, that's interesting, and then the second one was just kind of like, I feel like maybe I'm just seeing too much here, but yeah, the third one just, it feels like there is more character there now. There's a lot more that's kind of intriguing me, and I hadn't seen it before Captain Marvel, so for me it was like a straight up definitely Captain Marvel, probably still would be, to be honest.
Nice.
But I'm certainly more interested in seeing at the cinema now than I was after the second trailer, where I was kind of thinking more, just kind of waiting until it comes out.
Yeah, the first and second trailer had me thinking, cool, but I'll watch it on home video for sure. Rosa Salazar is the actor, and she was in the Maze Runner series, the Scorch Trails, Maze Runner, Death Curve, Death Cure, that kind of stuff. That's where she's from. It's hard because, of course, in the movie, they've CG'd the crap out of her face. And Alita is, she's got larger than life eyes, like kind of anime eyes and stuff. Mm. So it's kind of hard to recognize her. She also did a voice in Batman Arkham Origins as Copperhead, which is cool. So because she has that kind of voice where you're just like, where have I heard her before?
There does seem to be something familiar. Mm-hmm. I couldn't quite place it. So.
Yeah, but other actors are Christoph Waltz, Jennifer Connelly, I can't remember how to pronounce his first name. Mahershala Ali. He's in a lot of stuff. He was in the first season of Luke Cage. He was the main bad guy. He plays the bad guy in this too. He was also in House of Cards. He's a really good actor. Ali's a really good actor. So yeah, there's lots of really cool people in it. But yeah, I would see it if I had the opportunity, but it's an absolute, it's on my list to see when I have access to it at home or, you know, whether it's at Netflix or whatever, or if it's, something I get a chance to see in theaters. I'm wondering, do you think we should venture into Netflix, speaking of, as far as new trailers and new content, or should we stick to just like upcoming movies?
No, I think we should do it.
Netflix. Cool. So. This happened just the other day. As I was writing the notes for the show, the trailer for Stranger Things Season 3 came out. And it is phenomenal. Like, I am 100% in. I knew that already. Like, I enjoyed the other two seasons. The kids are getting big. Wow. Some of the older actors are really, really looking different. But it looks to be just an awesome 80s, like, throwback. The music is so good. The fashion is redonkulous, and it looks like a good time. I hope it doesn't suffer from the same pacing problems that season two did, but on the surface with this trailer, it looks like they are hitting the nostalgia note hard, which I think is good. But then you also get more of what you expect with the sci-fi weird stuff. And I can't remember his name. But one of the kids that was kidnapped and missing for most of the first season, is also mostly in the trailer weeping and looking upset, which is kind of his MO. So I hope that's not telling for the whole season just because like it just gets so repetitive. But other than that, I'm in. Like, I mean, that will show up on my Netflix subscription and I will be all in. The hard part is not watching like two a day. That's usually my issue with Stranger Things.
For me, I'm tentatively all in. And I say tentatively because I'm still only halfway through season one.
Really?
So, yes.
Wow.
Yes. It's at the time, what was it? That something ended up coming out and it ended up taking focus away from it. And I've just struggled to find the time to get back in. But it's one of those things where I saw the trailer for season two and it was just like, okay, this is just getting so much better. Mm-hmm. And 80s is... You know, like 80s movie references is something that I'm always all over. But the season three one I haven't watched yet, and I kind of don't want to see the season three trailer yet.
Yeah,
because I feel like that might spoil season two as well.
Yes, yeah, potentially. Well, the worst thing is, like, this is the kind of show where there is a lot of peril in it. And so if you see a character in the trailer for season three, then you know that they don't die in season two. So, like, that alone can be a little bit wonky. I avoid the internet like the plague when Stranger Things is out because it is an on-the-edge-of-your-chair show when you're into it. There's the impression because of the way that 80s movies tended to go that, you know, the core kids are probably going to be okay. But, that said, there's still some pretty hairy situations that have you on the edge of your chair, even in season one, Hey, you know what? I think you should have a plan. You should go buy a new TV and then you should wait. you've already done that.
Stage one complete.
Yeah. There you go. Check that off. Yes, check that off the tech tree, right?
It's definitely going to be a good thing to have something new to watch on there as well. I also, not going to lie, just slight sidetrack. Part of me did rush getting the TV as well because I wanted to make sure that I had it before Game of Thrones comes back out.
Nice. Yes.
Because that's going to be awesome.
Yeah. We talk about that on the show, obviously, for those of you that may be new. Every year when Game of Thrones comes out, the Citadel Cafe turns into the Game of Thrones show for this year. It's going to be 6 weeks. And that's all we talk about. It's we do a blow-by-blow, week-by-week, full of spoilers. There's no special barista cut. It's just straight up like, watch the show before you listen to the podcast because we go in deep. I didn't put that in here because I haven't. That is another show that I've not read anything or seen anything about season 8, which is the final season.
I'm trying to avoid as much as I can.
I saw one thumbnail on YouTube. I was like, nope, not doing it. Nope.
Abort, abort.
Yeah, and that was more. Even in the thumbnail, it was more than I wanted to see. I was like, ah, darn it! Yeah. Like, just give me a close up of like Jon Snow or Daenerys, and that's all I would need. You don't need to show me everything.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, Game of Thrones is definitely on my list as well.
One show that I did see a trailer for just yesterday, in fact, which I'm pretty sure it's a show you haven't caught up on yet, is Krypton.
No, I haven't seen a stick of Krypton.
They've now got the season 2 trailer for Krypton coming out, and annoyingly, if you watch the trailer to see who's in it, because they basically kind of give you a hint of some of the villains that are coming in, it will spoil some of season 1. So I really can't say anything to those who want to see the show. But essentially, for those who aren't aware, it is set at a time, it's set on the planet Krypton where Superman's from, and it follows Sigel, his grandfather. And a guy has traveled from Earth through time to basically be like, Superman is the savior of our planet, but he's about to die and I've got his cape and you need to change history so that he doesn't die. And at first, like the first half of the season it's kind of interestingly paced. It's kind of a bit weird, but then halfway through, it kind of has that point where it suddenly picks up, something changes and it's just like, okay, now I'm actually in on this. And I'm glad that I stuck through with it. So definitely worth kind of catching up with if you get the chance.
It's hard when stuff comes out like that, where it's familiar territory like Krypton, part of the Superman mythos, but then it takes a while for the show to find its feet. It's hard to stick through because there's just so much content out there now that if you can't get through those episodes, or if you haven't heard from enough people that no, it's worth it. Like, I remember the Stranger Things was a slow burn at first, and you really have to have everybody on like episode 5 going, oh no, you have to see the show to muscle through those first 3 or 4 episodes, which are not bad. It's a lot of setup, but it's a big world that they're building. And I think that what's good about media right now is that they have the opportunities to build these big worlds. They have the budget with Netflix to build these big worlds. The other side of the spectrum is that educating audience patience can be difficult, I think. And I'm guilty of it as well. I know for a while I used to say like, you got to get through the first 2 or 3 episodes of most Netflix series. Now I find myself saying, no, you got to get through the first 4 or 5 before they really start to get going. And which is it's a large ask, right? I mean, that's 5 hours, 4 hours of view time. If people are not sure about something, then it's a lot to get into. So moving on into, I guess, keeping in like the realm of horror stuff and Stranger Things, I saw the Hellboy Red Band trailer. I had seen the first one. I didn't realize that there was a Red Band. I didn't know that the movie was going that direction because they're dated. I liked the Ron Perlman Hellboy films. I haven't seen them in a long time, but I don't remember hating them. But this one has got the guy from Stranger Things, and wow, I'm blanking on my actor names. Donald? No, what's his? I like his acting too. Hellboy. It's a good thing I'm not connected to the internet where I can look this stuff up. this is how it goes on the show, folks. Making David Harbour. I wasn't even close. David Harbour plays Hellboy. I saw an interview with him where he was talking extensively about how much work and working out he had to do. And then he's in a giant rubber suit. And I was like, I guess maybe for like the mentality of it or to feel powerful, sure. But
maybe it's just the fact of having to wear a really heavy suit probably just takes more energy.
Well, yeah.
So it may even just be just to wear the costume.
Yeah. He was also he wasn't necessarily overweight, but he was meant to be a huskier, larger guy in Stranger Things. Like not a lazy sheriff, but a sheriff that doesn't necessarily go for a jog every once in a while. So I'm wondering if that also played it. Like
he sat behind a desk.
Yeah.
The part of the week.
Yeah. So it kind of makes you think that, well, maybe he had to do it for, you know, a number of reasons, like fitting into the prosthetic as well. I don't know. There's something about the Hellboy makeup that looks a little bit strange. It sounds terrible, but I almost think that they kind of made him too unattractive in the makeup, if that makes any sense. There's something about a hero or a main character in a story, I feel, that has to be appealing. I don't want to say attractive, but they have to be appealing. And something about the way that the character looks on film doesn't really jive with me. It feels odd. Granted, Hellboy's an odd comic, so I mean, I get it. So I'm not sure. It looks like a ride. It looks visually stunning, but all the stuff that they're doing in terms of the special effects and the world building, they strike me in the trailers as flashbacks and probably like 10% of the movie.
Yeah. I'm not sure if it was the Red Band trailer or trailer 2, but I had to watch it twice because I realized that as I got to the end of the trailer, I had mentally switched off for the second half of it.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly realized, like, hang on, I can't even remember what I just saw 10 seconds ago.
Because
I had to go back and rewatch it. I found it very difficult just to stay focused on it.
It's just cuts. Like, it's just clips. Yeah. There's no throughput. The trailer isn't trying to tease a story or tell a story or make you excited. It's just like, we made a movie, here's some pieces of it. It doesn't congeal. There's no throughput on it. There's no theme. It's just, you know, and in a lot of ways, the audio clips that you get from various characters stitched together feel like they kind of give you the whole story. And it's like, well, okay, why do I want to see another superhero fight a super villain witch person that's trying to take over the world? Like, you know, it's like we've seen this 100 times, you know, see Ultron, see, you know, Thanos, like this kind of stuff, it feels a little overdone. And granted, I understand that you have to kind of stick to the source material. I mean, I like Mila Jovovich. I mean, she's a good actor. And some of the other people that are in it are also good. But I'm not really sure about the way they're going to handle it. The other thing that I've noticed about the trailer, and you can maybe come back with me or come back to me if you feel the same. I can't do words tonight at all. I felt that whenever Hellboy was speaking in the trailer, that it was dubbed over. Like, it felt like the trailer video was off. And I don't know whether that's them cutting the trailer together with different things that he's saying, or whether he had so much trouble acting and projecting through the makeup that they had to go get him to do a lot of ADR afterwards. But it did
that's
not
good, that's
feel,
a good question.
It did not feel together. Like, it felt out of sync. And that, to me, if that happens in the theater, like, I will just check out. Like, you know, I'll have that same experience that you did.
I wonder if they're just going to sort of tweak the voice to make it a bit more hellish or something. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you can do that digitally without having to because it wasn't the sound of it so much as it was, like, the timing
just the
of it.
In sync
yeah,
of it.
The yeah. timing of it. Or sounding like, well, you and I are on microphones right now. It sounded like it was coming off of a very close mic. It didn't sound like it was part of the environment, right?
Yeah.
If he's in a big echoey stone chamber fighting something, his voice was like, you know, podcast level. And then everything else around him was like echoey and the explosions were going on and just like, and he wasn't shouting. Or he was shouting, but then his voice wasn't shouting. You know, like where the character was being loud, but then the voice wasn't projecting. So I'm not sure what was going on there. It could be something as simple as that their sound editing just isn't done yet. Like, I don't know.
And I just hope that narratively that they're perhaps holding back. In the same way that Marvel hold back a lot of the movie, just they're not very good at the tease. It could be as simple as that.
Yeah. No, that could be it too. That could be it too. Well, rounding out the superhero comic book stuff, we have Shazam. What are you interested at all in seeing Shazam?
I am. I'm actually really excited about it.
Interesting. Okay. Because I'm not.
And Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. Like, all I right. just, the more I see, the less I care.
I don't know. I really like it. I think part of it as well, that in the UK, I also grew up with a comic and cartoon series called Banana Man. And it has a kind of similar kind of theme where you have a kid who eats a banana and he suddenly turns into a fully grown adult superhero. And it's completely ridiculous and it's designed for very young children. But it's something that I really, really loved as a young child. And so I see this kid who suddenly has this moment where he's a bit like Tom Hanks becoming big. Mm-hmm. And all of that kind of is just resonating with me. And so, yeah, I'm kind of interested to see how it all works out. It's almost kind of like those, you know, kind of Big meets Banana Man meets Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
Is the kind of vibe I get.
So the part that really takes me out of it is the terrible outfit that they have him in.
Yeah, it's all kind of glowing at the very...
Well, the fact that he's got a hard... Instead of having, like, a symbol on his chest, like in the comics, he's got a hard plastic, like, LED lightning bolt, like a chest plate. Mm. And it's huge. It goes, like, down to his navel. and it looks really dumb. And then there's all these articles and stuff online that you see on YouTube where it's just like, you know, click here to find out how... Is it not Zach Levi? Who is that the actor that's in
Shazam? Yeah, that's it.
So Zach Levi. See how Zach Levi got in the best shape of his life for Shazam. It's like, but he's in a padded suit and it's an ugly padded suit. I would be pissed if I spent that much time working out to get in shape and then they said, oh, by the way, we're going to put you in this ugly padded suit. Like, he's a magical superhero. Just let Zachary Levi be in a superhero suit. It doesn't matter that his shoulders aren't as wide as Henry Cavill's or he's not as big as The Rock or whatever. Just let him be himself in the suit and let him have the superpowers. Like, I don't think it was needed. I also am not a fan of Shazam in any of the other series that I've seen in animation where he's got, because he's Billy Batson is what, 15, 14, something like that. Mm. And so when he's a superhero, he's got the same brain. He's got the mentality of a 14-year-old kid in an adult body with superpowers. And that to me just isn't appealing. Now, that's just subjective. That's me saying I'm not into that kind of thing. Not saying that this is going to be a bad movie. I will say, however, that Aquaman was a hot mess, and I don't think that DC is going to be able to pull their head out of the sand fast enough to make Shazam land where they want it to. I also think that coming out so soon after Captain Marvel, it is just going to pale in comparison.
that is a high bar they have to meet.
Oh, yeah.
Against that.
Yeah.
They don't have... This is the thing. They've got a really high bar as a Captain Marvel, but they still... With the exception of Wonder Woman, they really don't have a bar to compete with themselves.
No, that's true. That's true. Yeah, I mean, Wonder Woman would be the best.
So it could still be one of the best DC movies that we've had.
Yeah, but...
So there is that kind of thing.
I mean, they've set the bar. Shazam can't seem to leap over tall buildings. He crashed into one in the trailer when he tried to jump over it. Meanwhile, Captain Marvel has the bar in space. So... Like, I don't think Shazam really holds a candle in my books, but that's just me. Flying high and hot in the heels of Shazam is Dumbo, which is yet another Disney movie that they didn't make or didn't need to make into a live action movie with a CG character of the flying elephant. Granted, it's directed by Tim Burton. I haven't liked any of his stuff in a long time. I like his older stuff, but not any of his new stuff. I find his new stuff just freaking weird. And there's also this thing with the star-studded cast, and that always takes me out of it. Like,
it's a big cast.
There's no suspension of disbelief when Danny DeVito is the ringmaster. Like, it's just Danny DeVito in a ringmaster outfit. Like, you know, like, so it's there. I mean, it might be a good kids movie. I did enjoy Christopher Robin. I can't say that was a terrible film. It moved me. But the difference there is that Christopher Robin is not a retelling of anything. it's a revisit with some of the characters. It's a new story as to, you know, where Christopher Robin is as an adult. It's not...
It was a modern version of, like, Hook, where they kind of followed on from the Peter Pan story.
Yeah. But much better done than Hook. Yeah, much better than Hook. Yeah. But so to watch Dumbo again, I don't really care.
Yeah, for me, it's one of those, I might catch it, like, if it's on Netflix and I'm really bored. I'm not sort of, you know, wanting to really go out to see it.
Mm.
But, you know, like you say, I think it's going to be a brilliant family film. I think that families going out to see it with their kids, I think that that's going to be like a really big thing. Mm-hmm. And it is kind of neat just seeing, I've really been liking Michael Keaton's recent work.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I don't know. I'm starting to get to a point where now if Keaton's in, I'm just kind of like, yeah, I kind of want to see that now.
I liked him as Vulture in Spider-Man.
That's it.
Homecoming.
Yeah.
Like it's funny. There's this thing where not all, like, for example, I find Tom Hanks not believable as a villain, but he's in this character, this age range of leading actors where you can play like the gruff old mentor. Like you can be the Obi-Wan Kenobi with an attitude. Or you can, if for people, for actors like Michael Keaton, or who else would fit the bill? Kurt Douglas, I guess. But like you can play the bad guy, and it's something to do with just being a little bit older, a little bit gruffer. You can really, really play the bad guy. I'm blanking on the names of a bunch of different people, right now, but. There's a few actors when they get up there, they can really, really nail it. I would be curious to see his performance in it, but that's the only thing. I forgot he was in it right up until now. On the animated note, we also have Aladdin, which is the live action version of Aladdin. I think part of the reason why I'm a solid no on this is I think I overdid Aladdin as a kid. Like that was in the heyday for me of Disney, and like I think I even had an audio recording of Aladdin on cassette that I would listen to in the car on long rides. So like I couldn't recite it to you now, but as the movie is playing, I could probably read the lines to you as they come, just from just memory from years ago. I also feel like Will Smith as the genie is miscast. I feel like just animate it, like just if you're gonna go that far, then just animate it. I don't really think that I'm down for Will Smith as the genie for the same reason that I think that some of the star casts in Dumbo are also not going to be able to pull it off for me, is that I'm not going to see the genie. I'm just going to be looking at the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air painted blue, right?
Yeah, I can sympathize with it a lot though, because you know, you had Robin Williams who just did basically the quintessential genie.
Yes.
And like you're not going to be able to top that, and it would be very difficult for them to kind of try and do something that's pretty much the same. I think they wanted to avoid encroaching on the work that he'd done, especially after his passing.
Sure.
Just to not disrespect the work that he'd done. So I kind of in a way like that they have gone for something different. I know there was a lot of people who were really not happy with him, you know, just having Will Smith painted blue, but at the same time it's like you've got Will Smith cast as the genie, you want the genie to be blue, so what else did you expect other than a blue Will Smith?
Yeah, well, I mean, my expectations would be don't make the movie in the first place. Like, it just put all the money that you have towards something new.
I do kind of like what they're doing though, because at first it was a little obvious about Disney just kind of going, oh, we're going to do live action of the classic now and stuff.
Yeah.
But I was really, really impressed with what they did with Beauty and the Beast.
See, I heard that was terrible.
Really, I thought that like visually it was fantastic, and they did add to the story as well. They did throw in a few extra bits there. So I'm hoping that they kind of continue to do that with Aladdin, where basically you get more of a live action retelling, but that they do give you something extra too. But I guess it'll be one of those genres where you either like live action retellings or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to be one of those things where people aren't going to be picking and choosing between them. It's going to be you like them or you don't.
Yeah. Well, not to mention that I think that parents are going to go and they're probably not going to enjoy it as much, but kids are not going to know any different. So they're just going to love either both or just love the one that they've seen, which is the current, which is the new live action version. Yeah, so I just, yeah, I'm just indifferent to all this kind of stuff. But the other cartoon character that actually, surprisingly, I can't say I'm going to run out and see this in theaters, but Pokemon Detective Pikachu actually looks like a fun ride.
I'm so on the fence with this one. I really am. And it's partly because I didn't really grow up with Pokemon. I had friends who were at college who were starting to get into it. And I found it difficult to, and I kind of kept my distance from the whole thing. And so I don't know the franchise that well. I've seen little bits of it. I did see, they did an animated movie. And it was so weird kind of seeing that they were going to do this Detective Pikachu. It's like, okay, that's an interesting kind of take, seeing it. And then you've got Ryan Reynolds doing this, you know, basically speaking as Ryan Reynolds. And the voice was just so offsetting for me.
It's weird. It's part of the reason why I think I want to go see it is that it's like they really did have the balls to cast Ryan Reynolds as Pikachu. And I love the concept of Pikachu. For those of you that don't know, Pikachu in the cartoons just goes Pika Pika. That's all he says. And he
really high pitched.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I can't do it. but he in the movie, but in this film, it's like, this one dude has the ability to communicate with Pikachu. So he hears Ryan Reynolds when everybody else hears this little squeaky Pika Pika all the time. And so there's all this Pika Pika ranting happening, and then they switch and you hear Ryan Reynolds doing his thing, you know, where he's just fast talking his way around the situation. And I don't know. There's just, I didn't watch Pokemon. I didn't play Pokemon Go. I barely understand the concept of Pokemon. It was definitely like after my time. So it's not something that I have any nostalgia for. I'm just really curious, and it looks good. Like, the trailer is action packed. It's got a lot of jokes. I think it could be quite a lot of fun. I might have to bring someone that does know Pokemon with me so they can answer all my questions. who's that? Why is that thing that way? What's this thing? So yeah, I'm sure it'll be something I'm interested in.
Applications are now open.
Yeah, again, it's probably a home movie thing. Like, it's I won't necessarily get my theater seat, but something I'll definitely check out at some point.
Ryan Reynolds, definitely the one thing that's kept me on the fence. Like, I think if it wasn't for Ryan Reynolds, I'm invested at all. But like you say, it's an interesting casting choice, and it's hard not to like that guy.
So moving right along with the kids movies, you and I saw the trailer for Frozen 2 in front of Captain Marvel a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And that was interesting. It was a very serious trailer. Like, there was no laughs, no jokes. There was very serious kind of like ominous fantasy music going the whole time. Like a staccato violin, just kind of like high intensity, high anxiety music. And it was Elsa trying to get off an island using ice powers to try and get over a wave, which was cool. It was cool to watch, but it told you nothing. You have no idea what happens in this movie. And it was like, I guess it was a teaser trailer, but it was like the longest teaser trailer ever.
Yeah, it felt like about 3 minutes of just her trying to break through the ocean. And it almost seemed like she was trying so hard, her powers are increasing each time. But it's still not quite enough. But the second that those titles come up, I remember turning to you and just kind of just saying, no idea what's just happened, but that's going to be one hell of a film.
It looks beautiful.
I mean, there's no way it's not going to sell out.
Oh my gosh.
And I think, if anything, I think some parents will be just glad that there'll be another song that they can listen to rather than the same one from their kids. Because they're probably tired and fed up of, Let It Snow just being sung constantly.
Yeah.
Just having something else for their kids' repertoire will at least be a welcome addition, I think.
And yes, I'm sure that Alistair meant Let It Go as opposed to Let It Snow.
I said Let It Snow.
Yeah, save your emails. No, I've made that mistake before. I've absolutely done that before. Now, I haven't seen this trailer, but you saw the trailer for Toy Story 4.
Yes. Yeah, they've expanded a lot more on the teaser that they had. And it's looking like it's going to be interesting. So they've had obviously their toys, they come to life. And it seems that this next one is going to be that you've got the new girl that is the new owner of the toys from Toy Story 3.
Right.
And she has invented a toy. She's taken a spork and put googly eyes on it. And it's come to life as a toy because she's basically made it with her imagination.
Okay.
And it gets freaked. It freaks out because it knows it's supposed to be a spork. And runs out the room. And they seem to, like, all the toys are basically on an adventure to try and get him back. But it's basically just this whole, I shouldn't exist kind of thing. And it looks like it's going to be fun. And it does look like they are doing something different. And it's not going to be just, like, set in a house kind of thing or just set in a building. They are going, like, on a massive road trip with it. So, you know, it's Pixar. Pixar are always fantastic in my book, mm-hmm. and it's just nice that, again, they're doing what they do best, which is do something different and do something new.
I'm trying to remember.
Even if it is a fourth sequel.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember Toy Story 3. I remember Toy Story 1 and 2, because I've seen those probably more often. I remember Toy Story 3 and liking it. I don't remember it blowing my mind. I feel like Toy Story 3, I didn't like the long ending. I feel like I've talked about it on the show before, because the podcast has been around long enough that I've certainly talked about it, I'm sure. But I don't remember loving 3. I liked 2 a lot because I liked the space villain guy in 2.
Yeah.
Zerg, right.
Emperor Zerg, yeah. And I feel that the third one was supposed to round it out. That was going to be the last one. But if I remember an interview where they were saying that they'd suddenly come up with an idea that they couldn't resist doing.
Mm.
And so that kind of pushed them into doing a fourth, even though that wasn't the original plan.
And last on our list is the Godzilla King of Monsters trailer. I knew this was coming. Mm. I saw the first trailer and I thought, wow, whatever new Godzilla movie. I hadn't seen, I don't know if this is the second or the third. I remember seeing the first and not liking it. Like the first recent one, not the one with Ferris Bueller, but, the more recent one.
Bryan Cranston.
Yes, yeah, the one with Bryan Cranston. And this looks to be more of that ilk, where it's a huge worldwide event. All the different monsters, the Titans, they call them, are back. It's one of those things where I'm not going to see it in the theaters because it looks like a fun ride, but the story in these things never seem to hold me together.
Yeah, and Godzilla's not a franchise I've always been that knowledgeable of. Most of my knowledge has actually come from watching James Wolfe videos from Cinemassacre, who's known for the Angry Video Game Nerd series. But he's been like a massive Godzilla fan, and he's done a few videos that kind of explain it in a way that's understandable. And I saw something recently as well that was saying that essentially the Godzilla that we have in the movie is very slow paced. He can level Tokyo, but it might take him a week.
Mm-hmm.
But he could completely and utterly level it and be unstoppable. The villain that he's going up against can do it in minutes and is a lot more fast moving and stuff. So that's interesting that you've got this big, massive behemoth, but he's slow going up against something that is incredibly fast and agile. So I'm curious as to how that will turn out.
And the hero of the film, the Godzilla, they paint the Godzilla as the hero, and it looks terrible. Like, you have all these really cool looking versions of the Godzilla monsters, the villains that he goes up against, like Mothra, and I can't remember the other names of them, but Godzilla, again, like, he doesn't look physically capable, and he looks, I mean, I understand that there's probably some sort of homage being paid, but it looks like a dude in a giant suit, even though it's CG. Like, it still has arms and legs, and they didn't give it any kind of, like, animal agility to make it look like it could even defend itself. Like, I don't know. Again, it's probably one of those things that I would watch very easily on a Friday night at home, but will not really hit my radar when it's in theaters at all.
I wouldn't mind seeing it in the cinema just because you've got a giant, massive monster and it'd be good to see it on a giant screen. Though then again, I do have a 60-inch TV now, so maybe that'll change things.
Yeah, there's that too.
But yeah, this may change a few cinema for me. But I think it's one of those ones, see it at the cinema if I've seen everything else and there's nothing left to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could maybe see that.
That's kind of probably when I would go see it at the cinema.
Yeah, or you get those,
prioritize everything else.
Yeah, you get those rainy summer days, or it releases the end of May, so like it could be pouring sideways here, you know, in Nova Scotia in May, and you know, like, oh gosh, I had this plan to do something today, but now it's raining sideways. What's playing? And it's just like, well, that's the 1 o'clock show. You're like, ah, we're fine, we'll go see that. Like, I can sort of see that angle on it. But yeah, that rounds it out. I'd say I landed probably more on the negative on most. I'm more excited about stuff like Alita and Stranger Things and Netflix content than I am with things like Shazam or Dumbo, that sort of stuff. So is there anything out of all the stuff that we talked about outside of Avengers? I mean, that's, we already know that's an automatic yes. But is there anything that we've mentioned that you're just like, yes, that's probably the next thing I want to go see if I have the opportunity?
I'm probably going to say Shazam, in all honesty. As silly as it sounds, I do really want to see Aladdin as well. But there's just something about the way that Shazam is just resonating with my childhood. And as stupid as the costume may be, I almost feel that it's very fitting to the whole thing, that it is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, but Shazam is really, really excited about, probably more than I should be. But there you go.
For me, it's Alita: Battle Angel. So if I have an opportunity to see that, I will probably go, because I trust Steven's review. He has the same sort of eye that you and I do when it comes to story and good movies and things like that. So I think that he would not lead me astray. I don't think. Well, that wraps up this episode of the Citadel Cafe. If you'd like to find a link to all the trailers that Alistair and I talked about, you can head on over to thecitadelcafe.com. That is also where you can find links to our social media accounts on Twitter and Facebook with just the name of the show. You can email us and let us know what you are looking forward to this summer at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. A friendly reminder that in April, we are going to be turning into a Game of Thrones only show. So hopefully you are watching along with us and you will tune in for that kind of stuff as well. And if you'd like to discuss Game of Thrones with us outside of just a weekly podcast, head on over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. We are proudly listener supported. If you would like to help us make more great podcasts, then you can do that over there. Support at any level will get you into the Discord, where we talk about all kinds of nerdy stuff all week long, including quite a lot of Lego talk recently and some D&D stuff, which has been really, really fun. So check that out at patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. My name is Joel Duggan. Everything that I am doing online is at joelduggan.com, including my illustration and design portfolio. I've been hired quite a bit lately to do stuff for people's websites and social media presence. I did some illustration this afternoon on Twitch for a YouTube channel. I've been doing some motion graphics for YouTube. I've been doing some Twitch emotes for people. So check that out at twitch.tv/joelduggan, or again, just joelduggan.com. Everything I'm doing is all linked from my website. It's pretty easy to find. Last but not least, we did mention Minecraft at the top of the show, and I do another podcast called The Spawn Chunks, where you can listen to myself and my friend Johnny talk about Minecraft and Minecraft news every Monday. Alistair, where can people find you and all the cool stuff that you are up to online?
I have omyzod.com, where I've written some retrospectives of old movies that I enjoy. There's also twitch.tv/AlistairMcFly, where I may very well be joining Joel on some Minecraft adventures.
We have to come up with some fun stuff to do as a community on the Citadel server. I think that would be a fun thing, now that I know that several of our members have increased their hardware at home, and I think that could be fun. Even if it's not streamed, it would be fun to just kind of get together and do some stuff.
Definitely.
You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.